Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's nice to be with you again. I hope you enjoy this evening's edition of the Holohoax. You know there were no gas chambers by now in Germany, don't you? No gas chambers anywhere. It's just a big communist propaganda lie to defame the Germans and, by association, the white race. The only race that's being exterminated is us. Our numbers have gone down from 20% of the world's population in the 50s to less than 8%, and that number may be skewed by adding Hispanics and Jews to our numbers, and of course Hispanics are not white, and Jews are not white, so we don't know how many of us are left, but we know the white man is swift and fast, and will pick himself up in time to ensure his survival, and a nice territory for his children and the white race in future generations. And, of course, since there were no gas chambers, there was no planned extermination campaign. That's just a lie, and 6 million did not die. In tonight's program, we'll be discussing many issues, and I hope you'll stay tuned. Wow! I just clicked onto rahoa.org, and lo and behold, a whole new look. Really well organized, with all of these shows in archives. And the most important thing to me is that Alex DeSiva, our kid genius, this high school kid who's put this whole thing together, is encouraging you, ladies and gentlemen, to become broadcasters like me. And I want to encourage you to do the same thing. It's been such an experience loosening my tongue and saying what I really believe and getting a chance to hear myself talk and hear myself stumble over my words, because I'm just as brainwashed as the rest of you. It's not easy getting up and telling the truth when you've been so badly beaten down emotionally that you don't even know what the truth is anymore. $10 an hour is all it costs you to pay Alex to get a chance to get on the microphone and say what you have to say, and I really encourage every single white person to become a leader of society instead of just a hanger-back. Get up and say what you have to say. You might meet a very interesting person yourself. In the meantime, I also have another offer. I get 2 extra hours a month under my contract with Alex, and I would like to. I lose those hours if I don't use them. So if anyone has anything they want to say, would you send it to me in an audio file? And if it's, you know, halfway decent, I'll devote my time to letting some newcomers have their say. My email address is www. Oh, that's not my email address. That's my website. Well, my website, just for starters. And you get your pens and pencils out, boys and girls, because I'm going to give you my email address also. My website is www.monamontgomery.com. That's MONAMONTGOMERY. All small letters and no spaces. MonaMontgomery.com. My email address where you can send your audio files is MonaMontgomery@yahoo.com. What could be easier than that? Again, that's MonaMontgomery@yahoo.com. Send me your email, your audio files, and I'll run through them. And if, you know, if they're anything half as good as what we usually hear, it's going to be 10 times better than what we get on the Jew radio, right? So come on, well, let's break out of our shell of shyness, even if you stutter like me. Send me your audios, and I'll have them broadcast on my 2 extra hours. I get two specials a month, and I know Alex will be more than happy to give me airtime. He's been frustrated because I haven't been giving him enough files. So I hope to hear from you guys. And again, Alex, I know you're listening, and we all thank you for this wonderful work you're doing, and God bless you. You're certainly a blessing to the white race. It would really be interesting to get some of these anti-racists to give some kind of communication and dialogue with the people who promote the white race, but they just won't get into a dialogue. They come to the KKK rallies, and they throw dangerous objects and weapons at the people who are in the rally, at the people who are marching, but, you know, which seems like they'd be very brave people, doesn't it? They are willing to accost the racists, the white people in public, by throwing things at them, but they will never enter into a discussion. Have you ever noticed that? That you can't get someone who hates the white race into a discussion? Maybe it's because they sense that they have no frontal lobe,
And they're afraid of getting into an intellectual discussion because they know they'll lose. The anti-racists definitely have no arguments. That's clear. You should try getting into an argument with a Jew about the gas chambers. They have no arguments. And in fact, the latest important discussion took place about 3 years ago between Mark Weber and some big shot from the ADL. And Mark Weber made mincemeat out of this guy, proving that there were no gas chambers. So that the Jews have put out an edict that they are not willing anymore to get into any discussions about the gas chambers, because any discussion is doomed to having them lose, and they know it. So there are not any discussions. If you notice, when you get into the forums where there are open debate, and somebody gets up and tries to open up the discussion of the gas chambers, there is never a debate. It's always personal attack or foul language. Never a debate. There were no gas chambers. We've got that one proved. We've got all the evidence. We've got seismic evidence. Now, with the advent of new technology, we can actually take X-ray pictures going down into the ground about 30 feet or more. I mean, these are wonderful X-ray pictures that we've taken of the grounds, and there are no mass graves. There is not one person, not one autopsy that was performed on one person out of the 6 million they claim to have been murdered in gas chambers. They can't produce one single body that was gassed to death. The gas chamber in Auschwitz was built in 1948 after the war was over. It's a total phony. And there's another one in Treblinka, which was actually a shower room. And these liars built a fake wall underneath the showers, thinking that they could fool people, which they actually got away with for about a decade. Now, in order to keep the secret, they've got laws passed in 7 countries that make it illegal to question whether there were gas chambers. You actually go to jail in Germany for 5 years if you dare to suggest that there were no gas chambers. So, I mean, our evidence is just, it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger since the Berlin Wall fell down. And our researchers were allowed to get behind the Iron Curtain. And we have actually proven now that the Russian Revolution was perpetrated by Jews who killed 65 million white Christians after assassinating the white Christian Tsar, and that Hitler was trying to keep communism out of Germany, and he stood up to them. The communists won because America went to war against Hitler on the side of the communists, and they wrote the history. And it's a great big hoax. But the point I'm trying to make is, try to get anybody to talk to you about it. Try to get any of these Jews to talk about it, and they will not do it. All they say is, ignore that person, that person's a bigot, that person's a hater, kill that person. They will do anything but discuss the issues with you. I've looked at the artwork that was done by the Jews when they were living in the concentration camps, and I've read the accounts that the Jews wrote when they were in the concentration camps, and they don't say anything about gas chambers. They discuss a relatively pleasant life in a camp where the worst problem was that they had been taken from their homes, and they really missed their homes, and they were homesick. Really, really homesick, like you would expect. And they felt bad because they couldn't do their nails anymore, or have their pretty clothes, things that normal people would miss. Anyone would miss that. But they don't talk about gas chambers or any horrible cruelties, although they do complain about the cruelty of the Germans. But do you know what kind of cruelties they describe? Being told to be quiet when they're waiting for lunch, sitting in a line somewhere on a bench. They sound like kids in a high school today, like maybe in a Catholic high school or an Episcopal high school, and they hate the teacher because she won't let them talk. I swear to God, that's the worst complaint that I have found so far in these diaries, is that there were times when they weren't allowed to talk. And one of the punishments for doing some minor infraction was being told that you couldn't talk for a certain amount of time. When you read those diaries and look at the sketches and the paintings that they did, you would swear that you were in some camp in 1939. Not that anyone, most people can't remember that far back, but I can remember as far back as 1949, and I know what it was like. The teachers and the authority figures, the police, were authoritarian in those days. And you behaved yourself. And if you didn't, if you got out of line, you were punished. But the punishments weren't severe. They were just, you know, you have to go sit at the end of the bench and you can't talk for an hour. They don't even talk about being deprived of lunch. They don't talk about any cruelties. And when you look at the paintings that the Jews sketched, They don't look terrible. There's a sketch of a guy that one artist did, and it shows the laundry hanging out on the line, which has just been washed, and it's now there's the laundry hanging up, and one of the prisoners is doing push-ups, and another prisoner is sitting around. It looks exactly like a camp. Then when you go into the interior scenes, they show that they lived in barracks, very much like our military live. They had stoves, and they show pictures of the people gathered around the stove talking and brushing their hair and fixing dinner and taking care of the children. That's the truth. What the artists and the writers, the Jewish artists and writers, wrote about their experience when they were having the experience is the truth. All of the stuff that came out later, you know, these grotesque screaming faces and these expressions of horror and the unbearable terror, all of this kind of artwork came in about the 50s, after the Jews had learned how much pay dirt there was in promoting this false idea that they'd been tortured by the Germans so that they could get Israel. The contract is out against the descendants of the founding fathers. That's what we have to wake up to. It's the white people in America who hail back to the beginning of this country when the civil rights were defined and created, that they want to get rid of us. They want to get rid of us because we have an understanding of what those rights are for and what they're about. For instance, the freedom to speak your mind is essential if you want to be a human being. People who are not allowed to speak or haven't learned how to articulate what's in their heart and in their mind are not fully human. And they don't want us to be fully human. They want to stop speech. They want to stop intelligence. They want a dumbing down of the world so that they can grab that Middle East oil and live like kings while the rest of the world goes hungry. That's their evil dream of world domination that we have to fight. Hitler was never trying to dominate the world. All Hitler wanted to do was create a living space for white people so that the white race would have a homeland, as the black race has in Africa, as the yellow race has in China. Hitler thought the white race, the other of the three great races, should also be allowed to live. But that was not going to happen as far as the worldwide bankers were concerned, because they knew once oil was discovered and the automobile was invented, they put two and two together and they knew that the new world would be ruled by oil, and that whoever could control the oil in the Middle East would dominate the world. After all, there wasn't anybody living in the Middle East with all that oil except a bunch of sand monkeys. So they knew it could be taken, and anybody who controlled the world's oil would control the world. However, they had the problem of the white race. the white race would not allow a worldwide totalitarian state to take place, in which only the privileged few would be filthy rich and everyone else would be eating, living off of a cup of rice or something. The white race presented a problem, and the descendants of the Founding Fathers presented the biggest problem of all, because those were the enlightened white people. I'm talking about Americans. It's the Americans, the descendants of the Founding Fathers, who are the light of the world, the cream of the crop, and present the biggest problem to the world totalitarian state that the communists are planning. And don't think they haven't made headway. During the Second World War, they killed 65 million white Russians, and after World War II, they killed another 15 million white Germans through starvation by putting them in concentration camps. That's sort of a secret, but that's coming out in a couple of books. For example, one is called Other Losses, and another one is called Crimes and Mercies, and another one is called Some Kind of Deception by Ostrovsky. It's all coming out. Those Germans were purposely starved by Stalin in conjunction with, those Germans were starved through an agreement by Eisenhower and Stalin. Eisenhower carried out the murder of the white race by locking up 15 million Germans after the Second World War and starving them to death. There is a contract out on the white race, and especially targeted are the descendants of our founding fathers. If you want to try to figure out what a white person looks like, imagine a perfectly beautiful white person. Let's take Farrah Fawcett. I think she's a good example of a white lady. And then think of a beautiful black woman, the most beautiful black woman you can think of. Let's say Whitney Houston. She's pretty beautiful. And then think of the most beautiful Asian woman you can think of. I can't think of any offhand, but there are some. And picture her. Now you've got these three faces in front of your imagination. The white lady, the black lady, and the yellow lady. And now imagine that you have this morphing software that where the head changes into another head right before your eyes, or a ball changes into a triangle. You've all seen it. It's a new software that's been recently used by graphic artists. And you know how the morphing sort of is a gradual change that takes place. You start with the white face and you morph into the black face. At some point in that morphing, you can see that the face changes and loses the characteristic of the white woman, the Farrah Fawcett face. At some point in that continuum, it is gone. And it's at that point, when you no longer recognize the racial characteristics, that I maintain the person is no longer white. That's how I look at it. You can tell by looking at a person if they're white or black or yellow. Now, when you get to the mongrel races, like the mestizo Indian or the Jew, which is a very, very good example of the mongrel, you've got a person there that is part black, part yellow, and part white. And all you can say about that is that it is not white. It's just absolutely not white. You don't see Farrah Fawcett there anymore. Robert Redford, you do not see anymore. There's no characteristics that remind you of the classic champion white face, male or female. And that is a non-white. You know, it doesn't take a genius. It's like looking at dogs. How bright do you have to be to say, okay, that dog has some weenie dog in it, that dog has some police dog in it, that dog has some terrier in it, that dog has some Pekingese in it. It doesn't take any brains at all. Anybody can do it. The reason people cannot do that today is because they've been so brainwashed that it's a crime to notice and point out racial characteristics that they've actually have become colorblind. They actually don't know the racial components of themselves or their friends. And that's what has to change. We have to take the blinders off and look at ourselves and look at each other honestly for racial characteristics and decide what are we going to do about the next generation? Are we going to continue creating mongrels, or are we going to try to unmix and create normal human beings the way God made us? And you know those psychotropic drugs that the Jewish psychiatrists give you? Do you know what they do? They attack your frontal lobe. They make your beautiful frontal lobe atrophy so that you lose your advantage if you're a white person. Those impressive raised frontal lobes get attacked, atrophy, and die, and your brain becomes that of a non-white. Well, do you think it's a coincidence that the jealous Jew gives drugs to the white man that prevents him from being white anymore and brings him down to the level of a Jew or a Negro or a Mexican? That's what they're doing. They've declared war on the white man, and they're promoting drugs, illegal drugs and legal drugs, any kind of drugs. They love any kind of drug if they can get a white man to take a drug, because that drug will go to his frontal lobe, which distinguishes him from the non-whites, and destroy that frontal lobe and basically turn him into a non-white. I guess you'd call that bioterrorism, right? That's what they're doing to us. They're trying to convince white people to take drugs any way they can. They'll get you on the street by telling you it's groovy and hip, or they'll get you when you're low and feeling depressed and tell you that you need these drugs that'll get you over your depression. They get you addicted, and they destroy your brain. Then you can't be white anymore. You're not a threat anymore. You lost your advantage. Once those frontal lobes are attacked, you lose your advantage. You lose your intelligence. A very famous Negro once said, "Don't criticize other groups because you might find out you're one of them." Is that the quotation? You shouldn't have standards because you may become a member of a subhuman group. Therefore what? Therefore we should all become subhuman? Because some people are subhuman, and it would be wrong to judge subhuman people as less than or inferior to human beings? Is that what we're being taught in school now? Well, I don't know if you know how the history of the development of man went, but it went something like Australopithecus, Homo erectus, Neanderthal, Cro-Magnon, Homo sapien. Each time a new model developed, there was the killing off of the old model and some interracial breeding. So we know that it's a lie that just because a black man and a white woman can produce offspring, that they must necessarily be of the same species. We have proven that to be a lie by showing that Australopithecus reproduced with Homo erectus, Homo erectus reproduced with Neanderthal, Neanderthal reproduced with Cro-Magnon, and Cro-Magnon reproduced with Homo sapien. That's why the European has 1.4% Neanderthal blood. So there's nothing wrong with looking at the various races, which are considerably different from each other, so different that the smell of one cannot be tolerated by the smell of another, because they're basically different animals. So having these differences, are we really being taught that it's wrong to notice these differences? That it's sinful to say the race that produced castles, museums, and churches is not superior to the race that has lived in mud huts since the beginning of time has never produced a written language and hadn't invented the wheel until the white man showed it to him? Is that now a sin to see what's there to be seen and speak about it? No, I don't think so. I think it's essential that human beings maintain their sensibilities, their ability to differentiate, and their ability to judge between right and wrong, better and worse, superior and inferior. Because if you don't, you're not going to know which direction is the right direction, and you're going to go backward, and you will fall back and become one of the beasts. And you won't like it. Because once you become a beast, you can never leave the neighborhood. Nobody wants you back. There's no question that the Jews promote lies in order to get the United States of America to support them in their atrocities against the Palestinians. One of the commonest lies is that we are entitled to Palestinian land just as America is entitled to the land that America took away from the Indians, because the Palestinians, like the American Indians, are mere range animals, and the land is therefore unsettled. Since they are not fully human, then you can't say that they have actually owned the land. But that's not a fair comparison or analogy. In truth, and in fact, the American Indians were basically a range animal, like the African American. They were nomads, hunters and gatherers. They didn't have property rights, and they didn't own the land in any sense that the European understands the idea of ownership. They didn't even cultivate the land, except for the Cherokee Indian, which was largely Anglo-Saxon genetically, because there was a lot of interbreeding between the Cherokees and the white man. But it is true in the case of both Africa and America that the conquering Europeans ran into an unsettled land peopled only by Aborigines or close to Aborigines. And it is not true that the Palestinians are this same type of animal, or let me say human. The Palestinians have a culture. They have ownership of property. They build buildings. They conduct trade. They have deeds. It's a complete lie on the part of the Israelis to make you think that the Palestinians are on the same level of evolution as the American Indians or the sub-Saharan Negroes. It's a myth, and it's referred to in a book called Image and Reality of the Israeli-Palestine Conflict by Norman G. Finkelstein, a Jew, as one of the primary myths that the Israelis promote in order to get Americans to believe that they have a right to Palestine as well as Israel. It's called the Virgin Land or Wilderness Myth. This land, they say, the Palestinian part of the partition plan, is peopled by no one but range animals without property rights, and therefore we can take it at will. What's important about this is that it does not take into consideration that before the Israelis moved into Israel, they agreed to the partition plan, which was created by the United Nations and created Israel and Palestine at the same time with the same stroke of the same pen based on the same map, known as the partition plan. This agreement included a term which mandated that the Israelis allow the Palestinians to continue residing on the Israeli side of the partition plan. Instead, as soon as the Israelis got to Israel, they used torture and force to expel 700,000 Palestinians, resident Palestinians, from the Israeli side of the partition plan, and then commenced to take land from the Palestinians. They've already taken 50% of the land of the Palestinians, and they're on their way to taking the rest, which they dare to call Israel, in order to confound and confuse the mind of the well-meaning but not educated person. Not that it's any American's fault that they're not educated. Our media doesn't tell us the truth. It tells us only the Jews' side. Either you're loyal to this country or you're not. The President of the United States, in my opinion, acted as a traitor when he, after 9/11, he did not close the borders. And we've had treasonous presidents before who have put their personal interests, their personal political interests, above the interests of the United States national security. No country can survive without borders. This country has no borders, thanks to the presidents of the United States who have preferred to remain in office than to exercise their mandate under the Constitution, which is to put the military on the borders, when, as now, they're being invaded at the rate of almost 1 million a year. Criminal, illegal aliens, without benefit of medical tests or any kind of background check, are coming across our borders as if we had no right to borders. And indeed, we have no right to borders. If we have no right, no borders, that proves we have no right to borders. And if we have no right to borders, we are not a sovereign nation. But of course, that's not entirely true. It's just what the architects of our destruction want to make completely true. And as good Americans, we must fight this force. At the same time, we are going to war on behalf of Israel, and we're spending over half of our foreign aid budget on Israel, and we are bankrupting Israel's illegal human atrocities against the Palestinians. So there are two strokes of the same pen. If you're going to be honorable to this country, loyal to this country, two things have to be done, and they have to be done at the same time and immediately. The borders have to be closed, and aid to Israel has to be stopped. It's the same thrust of the same sword of truth. You're either going to defend America or you're going to exploit America. And the choice will be seen in what you do about the borders and the foreign aid to the rogue terrorist state of Israel. One way that you can tell when someone's telling the truth or is an honorable person is whether they obey the rules of normal decorum. For example, if somebody starts in hurling verbal abuse at you and calling you names, telling you you're stupid, telling you you're a liar, you're up against somebody who's not playing fair. Probably this man is supporting Israel, because Israel is the downfall of America, and the Israelis are in their death throes. They know they've been caught. 9/11 pulled their covers, and lo and behold, we had three cells of Jewish spies, which Michael Chertoff, the head of Homeland Security, sent safely home to Israel, and then went about the work of putting in jail all of the white dissidents who had been pointing their fingers at Israel and saying, Israel is bad for America. And then when 9/11 hit, these same white heroes, and I'm talking about David Duke, Matt Hale, and Ernst Zundel, started saying, we've been trying to tell you that the Jews are not good for America. And so Michael Chertoff, the Jew, sent these three cells of spies, one of which had 200 members, safely to Israel, and now we're watching the Jews take over America. Our borders are not secure, and we're getting a little upset, so we're starting to listen to the news. We're starting to question things. Why was our country attacked? And why is the president suppressing the information? Why is it a secret? Why was the investigation into 9/11 shut down by Michael Chertoff, who instead went around jailing all of the white people who were warning the people of America about the problem of Israel? Why was there no investigation? Why is it that the little investigation that we had into 9/11 has been sealed, and that our president is fighting with Congress right now saying it should not be opened in the interests of national security? Just like the investigation into the assassination of JFK, which took place 3 months after JFK went to Israel and demanded that they turn over their nuclear weapons, which they had illegally made with American money. We have a big problem with Israel. And when you see people screaming and yelling and calling you a bigot or calling you an anti-Semitic Semite for daring to call attention to the irregularities that we're seeing Israel commit against America, you just have to stand firm and say, this isn't about love, this isn't about hate, this is about my country, and I want my country to be honored. I want my country's borders to be secure. I don't want my country going to war for Israel. And I don't want my country giving weapons of mass destruction to Israel that can be used to commit inhumane atrocities against the Palestinians. It's time for Americans to stand up and speak. And don't be intimidated by these, strong male voices that you're going to hear trying to put you down and make you feel like you're unworthy because you're challenging Israel, or that you're a dumb nuts, or you don't know what you're talking about, or worse yet, you're a liar and nobody's going to listen to you, or you, because all of you are bad, bad people because you're not supporting Israel. It's time for Americans to see through the propaganda and focus on Israel. You have to focus on the very thing they won't let you focus on, or you're nothing but a brainwashed lemming. And Israel is America's number one problem, and Israel has to go Israel's own way. America has to sever ties with Israel, stop supporting the atrocities against the Palestinians, and just escape the onus of being a rogue terrorist state. Well, you can say that diversity makes us strong, but you could also be wrong. There's no proof of that, and that no mention of that is to be found in the Constitution. The thing that made us different was that we thought there should be a larger elite ruling the nation, not that there should be no elite. The Founding Fathers never envisioned communism, and certainly not worldwide communism, where democracy would disintegrate into mob rule. If diversity is a strength, then you would think that America's culture would be better off now that it's become so diverse than it was in the 50s when it was basically homogeneous. But the fact is we have much more crime. The standard of living has gone down in terms of stress count. The family is basically non-existent. Children don't get care. The morals are gone. Because what has happened with all of this diversity is that we've all sunk down to the lowest common denominator. Upper class people are behaving like lower class people, and in fact aspire to do so. Children are mimicking the mannerisms of gangsters instead of the way it's supposed to be, where lower class people aspire to be upper class people. I hold up the ideas and the ideals of the Founding Fathers. We were meant to be a wealthy, educated, cultured, and therefore spiritual community. There's nothing spiritual about being primitive, superstitious, eating your fellow man like the cannibals do. True spiritualism comes from a lifestyle that allows you time to commune with God, to formulate ideas, architecture, for instance. It's not everyone's ideal. A lot of people love the idea of everybody being reduced to eating one bowl of rice a day, but it's my ideal. I want everyone to be wealthy and cultured, and I want to come and live in a good culture with a nice people. That work, as you define it, labor, grunge labor, has been talked about by philosophers as being dehumanizing. And I think if you took the time to read the world philosophers, you'd discover that grunge labor is not a spiritual component. It's not a component of spirituality. What makes a man spiritual is learning to live with his fellow man in a loving way so that he can do business deals that benefit mankind. Cultures throughout the world, the truly high cultures, were cultures that had enough material goods and enough leisure time for men to talk to each other and create ideas. I'm not a Jew hater. I'm a communist hater. I don't agree with the philosophy of bringing the culture down, which is the cost when you inundate your country, which is basically intelligent, educated people, and you bring in unintelligent, uneducated people. That's what I'm talking about. America has succeeded as it has, not because of diversity, but because of capitalism. Capitalism encourages innovation. Now you can bring down our beautiful capitalistic society if you inundate it with people who can't possibly understand or contribute to capitalism because they have no education or desire to be educated in the philosophy of our founding fathers. 20 or 30 years ago, you couldn't become a citizen unless you passed a test that proved that you understood American ideals. We don't have that anymore. In addition to that, we have almost 1 million illegal people coming into this country on the basis of a criminal act, which is coming in without being legal immigrants. Our whole fabric of our morality is disintegrating because we're not standing up for our right as a country to maintain our borders and to maintain the standards of our immigrants. And yes, the educational standards have gone down. They no longer teach philosophy, literature, Shakespeare. These things have been taken out of the curriculum, even in college. Shakespeare is no longer taught because he's, quote, too white. That's going too far. I'm saying that Americans should make decisions based on what's best for America, not what's best for anyone else. It may be that there's someone out in the world who's capable of becoming a valedictorian. And if that's true, under our legal immigration system, we have the ability to find and locate that gifted person and bring them in legally. But it harms the interests of America to allow everybody into this country without any form of scrutiny, especially when we keep our borders open and allow people to make their first official act on their way toward becoming an American, the illegal entry of our country, which puts them ahead of the ones who wait 5 years to come in legally. Our problem is not educating everybody in the world. That's what I'm trying to stress. America's problem is America. We need to get an understanding that we are a country, a sovereign nation with limits. Our own people should come first. That's what I'm trying to stress. Everybody knows by now, I think, that in 7 European countries you go to jail for denying the Holocaust or even questioning the details, such as whether or not there were gas chambers or whether 6 million Jews died. Don't you think there's a reason that it's against the law in those 7 countries? Do you really think this one event in history is so sacred that people should go to jail for researching the subject? Obviously, there's a cover-up. And yes, I'm very interested in knowing why 6 or 7 countries make it illegal to investigate. I am a fan of Ernst Zundel. I'm watching his case carefully. He was just deported from America on a bogus, trumped-up immigration violation because he didn't have a visa in America when Germans aren't required to have visas in America. Why is this country persecuting people like they are in the other 7 countries where you go to jail for questioning details regarding the Holocaust? It's obvious there were no gas chambers. Seismic tests have been done. There's new kinds of X-rays. They've taken pictures of under the ground of all of the concentration camps, and they have not found any mass graves full of bodies. Secondly, the Auschwitz concentration camp that everybody's taken through was built in 1948, after the Second World War. The one in, it starts with a B, Birkenau, I think it is, or I might have that wrong. They actually, in order to promote this communist lie about the gas chambers to get Israel established, they actually put in false ceilings to make it look like they were gas chambers instead of showers. You bet I'm a Holocaust denier. Any good American who believes in free speech should get involved in the research, and you'll be astounded at the lies you've been told. I'm saying simply that there were no gas chambers. Of course there were crematoriums. Every camp, every hospital has crematoriums. There were a lot of deaths, but not 6 million. The people who died in the concentration camps mostly died of typhoid fever. That's why their heads were shaved when they entered into the prison situation, because they were full of lice, having come from Eastern Europe. Typhoid fever was a terrible problem, and their clothing had to be fumigated, and their hair had to be shaved. I'm not saying that the concentration camps didn't exist. Of course they did, and many, many people died. And the pictures that we've all seen are accurate, but there were no gas chambers. I find that amazing. Well, everything has been rewritten since the Berlin Wall came down, and our scholars got behind the Iron Curtain and were able to look at the archives. We now know that the Russian Revolution was conducted 90% by Jews. Jews who had been kicked out of Russia and went to America to invent some way of wresting the power away from the white race. Remember the world banking system, which was run by Rothschilds? Rothschild, Hitler pulled out of the world's banking system. He was a rebel. He refused to fall under the domination of the Jewish bankers, and he conducted business in Germany without benefit of loans from the world banking system, which caused Germany's economy to accelerate very fast and to prosper. Hitler promoted home farmers, small farmers. He got industry out of the farming industry. He supported the family. He supported Protestantism. He proved, and he was right, that Catholicism had not only been taken over by Jews, but was actually started by this fiend from hell, Saint Paul, who had been appointed by the Romans to destroy early Christianity by throwing the Christians to the lions. Hitler was born Catholic, but he converted to Protestantism when he understood that the Catholic Church was just promoting the Jewish cause of controlling Christianity and stamping out the voice of Christ. In 1450, Pope Innocent VIII had two Jewish men, one named Jakob Sprengler and one named Wilhelm Kramer, with a K, write a book called the Malleus Maleficarum, which was used by Catholic priests to torture to death millions of apostate Protestants and Jews who would not submit to the authority of the Pope. The Pope was the brainchild of St. Paul, who, as I said, had been torturing, throwing to the lions, all of the Christians. And then when he couldn't control them, when he found that it just strengthened their resolve, he actually created and joined and controlled the Christian/Catholic Church to prevent, not to promote, the voice of Christ. Hitler knew all of this, and he taught it. And he wiped out the Jews, and he wiped out the Catholics, and he wiped out the communists. And he said, here in Germany, we're going to have a high culture. We're going to promote the arts. We're not going to be liberals. We're not going to be communists. We're not going to see 65 million of our people killed the way the Jewish Bolsheviks killed in Russia. That's who Hitler is. He's a great saint. He alone in history, except for the KKK, stood up steadfastly against the communists in spite of worldwide criticism, because he is not willing to capitulate the Christian spirit to the communist atheist spirit. That's what makes him a saint. Well, it's taken me a while to get the numbers, so I'll start with what I wanted to talk about, which is the folly of trying to argue against somebody's philosophy by simply saying they're crazy. For example, Hitler. Even if Hitler was crazy, which he was not, it isn't enough to say he was crazy. You have to say what it was he did or said that you disagree with, and then argue your position. Now, Jim the Fiend says Hitler was crazy, and he uses as proof that Hitler was an anti-Semitic. I'd like to argue that being an anti-Semitic is not crazy, and has only been seen as being crazy in the last 50 years or so, since the Jews got a hold of this newfangled science called psychology, which is married to communism, in which they get to decide what is and is not crazy, starting, of course, with anti-Semitism. But really, what is crazy about a white person wanting to marry a white person as opposed to marrying a Semitic? There's nothing crazy about that. It makes perfect sense. If a white person doesn't choose a white marriage partner, the children will not be white. So is it crazy to want your grandchildren to look like your grandparents? If you think it is, then you could say Hitler was crazy. But if you think that people with traditional values have a right to their values, and that people have a right to choose what their children should look like based on the choice of a marriage partner, then it's not crazy at all. In modern psychological science, it's considered crazy not to like black people. They say that if you don't like black people, you are therefore psychotic. Do you really think that's a basis for determining a person's sanity or lack of sanity, based on whether or not they like black people? And yet, that's what the modern-day Jewish psychologists / communists have done to us. They have redefined sanity. Sanity used to be defined as knowing the difference between right and wrong. Now we define it as, how well do you get along with members of other races? And especially, how much are you willing to race mix with a race which will surely result in the extermination of your own race? Now that's crazy. You can't understand these wars unless you take into consideration two important factors. The development of the automobile, which made oil in the Middle East important, and the racial component of the deaths during both the First and the Second World War. The war was waged not by English, not by German, not by French, but by international bankers who foresaw the importance of oil and determined to take over the Middle East. These men were Jews, headed by Rothschild, who was in charge of the world banking system. And they actually planned and plotted to set white men against white men, partly in an attempt to commit genocide against the white race, partly to set up worldwide communism, but above all, to gain control of the Middle East and the oil. In the First World War, the Jews were already making their move. And of course, these were not Jews at all. These were people who just saw the brilliance of using the Judeo-Christians' belief in the Jews to name themselves as the chosen people who would take over the Middle East in order to get the oil. So a lot of things happened in 1917. The Balfour Declaration, I think, started to be created. There was the Armenian genocide by the Turks. There was the beginning of the Russian genocide by the Jewish Bolsheviks. Lawrence of Arabia took over Arabia and handed it over to the English, who had been polluted even in their monarchy by Jews, so that now the English monarchy looks like a Jewish family, not an Anglo-Saxon family, probably because they are. This is about racial struggle for oil in order to dominate the world, and these little wars, these little battles between French, German, and English can't be understood unless you understand the underlying cause, which was to get control of the oil and set up a world totalitarian state. So what we need to do is locate those 20% of Americans who hate America in the following way. We start with a loyalty oath and a literacy test. And then we go into a couple of the major human rights that we believe in. For example, freedom of speech. Now, white people instinctively understand that it strengthens the society if men articulate their thoughts and their emotions verbally, not only because it builds ideas, but because it prevents physical violence. So you start with that one premise of our founding fathers. Do you stand for the right of your fellow American, to speak his mind and speak his heart? Are you willing to ignore your fellow American instead of falling upon him with guns and knives? And that would immediately get rid of, for example, the riffraff in this room, like Jim the Fiend, who is a Jew and who thinks it's perfectly appropriate to boot people and send Trojans into their computers if they don't support Israel. We would immediately spot who the Americans are and who are the parasites. We just need a loyalty test. Well, that's it for tonight, folks. I hope you enjoyed this evening's edition of the Holy Hoax. See you again, same time, same station. Until then, stay white. No Jews, just right.